Welcome to Movie Cigars and a Brew with Keith and Andrew. I'm Keith.
I'm Andrew.
So we're in week 7, Andrew. What are we going to talk about today?
We're doing the Movie Geek Cred episode, where we're picking two movies with some serious movie geek cred. First one is Being John Malkovich, 1999, directed by Spike Jones. The writer is Charlie Kaufman, starring John Cusack, Cameron Diaz, and Catherine Keener. Versus Mulholland Drive, 2001, directed by David Lynch, starring Naomi Watts, Laura Harring, and Justin Theroux.
And what's the cigar?
Cigar of the week is the Excalibur 1066 Dark Knight.
Okay.
Coming in at 5.75 by 54. The country is Honduras. The wrapper is Connecticut Broadleaf. The binder is Connecticut Broadleaf. And the filler is Honduran, Nicaraguan, and Dominican Republic.
Does Batman endorse this one since
Batman
it's the Dark
Knight? Batman definitely
Night?
Does endorse this.
Hmm.
Good thing it came out before the movie, so...
Yeah.
Actually, it's part of the Hoyo de Monterrey series. I think there's a Connecticut and a Cameron wrapper, and they call this, obviously, the Dark Knight because of the Maduro.
Okay.
They're owned by General Cigar, which is a huge cigar company. Kind of like General Motors and Chevy's are brands, so this is like...
This is another one of the brands of General brands. Motors, in that case. General Cigar.
General Motors, yeah.
Yeah, General Motors Cigar.
Combine the two.
Excellent. So,
what are we drinking?
Well, no, actually, I just want to talk about the cigar. So, it's got a Maduro wrapper, you said, right?
Yeah, a binder too. So it's like a double Maduro.
Yeah. So it's got a very roasted sort of flavor right off the bat, right? So
it's almost jet black.
Yeah. Dark
it's a
night.
A little oily to the touch, and I'm getting cocoa.
Yep.
At least from the initial.
That was my first. Right after first draw was like that. Tastes like chocolate in a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, so. But, yeah, I think it's pretty good. We'll see how it holds up throughout the show. I'm sure it'll have a wonky burn, as all of the Maduros seem to have.
Yeah, to be expected.
We expect that. The beer of the week, I'm going back to one of my favorites from college. This used to actually be on tap at one of the local places around Cornell when I was at Cornell, and it's called Saranac Black Forest. It's out of Utica, New York. Matt Brewery. It's a fourth generation brewers out of Utica, New York, of German descent. And this is a very dark beer. It's supposed to have some caramel sweetness. It's got a medium body, and it has a pretty nice creamy head. When you pour it, and I just think it's a good solid beer. I know when I had it on tap, it was one of my favorite beers when I was in college. So,
okay.
that was why I picked this one. And it's another craft brew, sort of a regional type of thing. You might not find it everywhere, but if you see it, it'd be something to pick up because I think it's pretty good. What do you think of it so far?
Well, it's definitely dark, and it's not. It's not sweet. It's not bitter. It's sort of in the middle. So,
yeah, It's got a real even flavor. I like it. We'll see how that holds up throughout the when we get to the end of the show. So, what are we going to start with? Being John Malkovich?
Yeah, let's start there. So, basically, the movie's about John Cusack's character who finds a portal into John Malkovich's head,
right,
or brain, and you get to see. What he's doing for, I don't know, about 15 minutes or so, and then you get dumped on the side of the road of the New Jersey Turnpike.
Exactly. It's sort of a... This was definitely a movie I watched for the first time, upon your suggestion. You picked both movies this week, and I thought... I have to say, I thought it was a pretty fun ride. I mean, I like movies like this, I think, in general. I like a movie that... you just didn't know where it was going to go. Everything about it, right off the bat, when you saw the apartment, and you see Cameron Diaz in a role where she just doesn't look like herself at all, or what you'd expect. It was, you were going to be in something that was pretty interesting. I mean, you knew you weren't in a real place with a chimp,
chimp
sitting in a diaper in the middle. on the middle
well,
of the floor.
That doesn't
there.
Seem real to you?
No, but I'm just saying, like, you knew you were going... Well, and I think the thing was, it was so matter-of-fact. Plus, that apartment looked so New Yorkish. It was sort of dank. It was tiny.
Yeah.
It felt oppressive. You know, it just felt, you know, I don't even think there was a window in it. It didn't look like you had a window.
It sort of implied it was in the basement, right?
Is that what, yeah, maybe that's what it was.
And somebody was always yelling.
Yeah, so it was quite, I thought it was quite interesting start to the movie.
Yeah, I was amazed that they made Cameron Diaz, I'll just say it, they made her ugly.
Yeah, I mean, she didn't come, I didn't even recognize her for a few minutes there.
Right.
I'm not the biggest Cameron Diaz fan in general. I mean, I think she's okay looking, but I never thought. I think
she's more attractive than ugly. Here she was.
Yeah,
homely.
No. I don't. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I shouldn't be calling her unattractive. But
I'll do it. She's ugly.
No, I'm talking about in general. I'm saying but right. I'm not a huge fan of Cameron Diaz necessarily, but or even. John Cusack. I'm not a big fan of his work either.
I like John Cusack. He's got a good body of work. If you look at all the stuff, it's he does dark comedies pretty well.
Yeah, no, he did. He played the role in this, I thought, very well. I just I think there's one scene I think just kind of ruined him for me in one of his movies. So with him standing with the boombox and say anything, I don't think I can get past that ever.
Okay.
I just.
You're just upset because you thought of it first and you did it before.
No,
you did.
I just think it was cliche. It was just such a cliche, goofy thing.
Did you see that? I don't think I even saw that movie.
I don't even know if I saw it either, but I saw that scene and I already know I hate it.
So you hate it?
I already know I hate that movie. I know I hate that movie.
So next week we're going to do Say Anything and then John Cusack Marathon.
I saw 1408 with him in it. It was kind of freaky.
I'm not sure that's something you would want to tell people.
No, it wasn't that bad. Actually, I thought it was freaky. That was a freaky movie. But anyway, back to this. So his character goes in to he's a puppeteer.
He's a failed puppeteer.
Well, exactly. It was a funny scene where he was on the street, and he apparently likes to do very suggestive puppeteer work.
I don't know what bothered the combination of religious characters. Simulating
exactly
simulating
right.
sex in two different rooms, and the little right. girl's going, "Look, puppet show."
Yeah, right. And the dad punches that solves his street performance, punches the guy in the mouth, and this he goes into the pet shop, and basically this is not the first time that happens, but
right.
so she suggests that he should go
so
find a job.
He's a slow learner,
apparently. Yeah. So she suggests that he should go find a job. And he goes to one of the more interesting workplaces that you'll ever see portrayed in a movie.
Right, the seventh and a half floor.
Right.
Where they have to actually stop the elevator, open the door with a crowbar.
Which is just absurd on so many levels. And if you can't get past, you have to at that point, if you didn't think all the other stuff was absurd, this element kind of brings it home that you're going on a fun ride and, you know, just hold on, you know, suspend disbelief and just go in.
Right.
You know, and the first person you meet is obviously the woman who is dyslexic, but she claims to be a
speech
guru.
Yeah.
and can't understand anything that's being said.
Well, that was the thing, like, she didn't hear what other people are saying. So she could have been a speech therapist. She just needed a hearing aid or something.
I don't know. But it was just one more element that was just like, this is out there.
It's a little bizarre.
It's a little bizarre.
But, so he gets a job as a file clerk.
Because he's got fast fingers.
His puppeteer fingers obviously pay off.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I like the training video where they explain why it's the seventh and a half floor.
Exactly, and you kind of feel for that because we've all had to sit in one of those training rooms and sit through that video, and to a large degree, I think most of them are the same level of foolish and silly.
Same level of this is annoying. Are we done yet?
And maybe partially untrue to a large extent, like this.
But the story was they built a half a floor for a small person.
Right. Because the builder fell in love with her.
Right.
And he wanted a place where she felt like the world was normal.
Meanwhile, she's obviously no longer there, and everybody else is hunched over.
Well, yeah, I mean, that happened, generation past or something, and now, because of the prices in the city, this is obviously a cheaper place to work. But I guess...
low overheads.
Yes, the low overhead, that's right. We love it because of the low overhead.
We pass the savings on to you.
I think there's a certain element of that, if you wanted to kind of say what that was kind of drawing from or trying to lead you to, of, you know, the oppressive nature of having to trudge to work and do trudgy jobs and just how it sort of weighs upon you. You know, I think that's I would look at that and say that that's, you know, maybe you could draw what he was trying to get at there about being at work.
No, he was actually in a half a floor. That's how
I don't know. You took it literally.
No, I know what you're saying.
That's what I was thinking. I'm like, you know, it's kind of a good depiction of what it's like to work. But yeah. So then we got Malkovich at this point. So he finds this doorway into
the portal into
Malkovich's head. Right. And I know they, you know, there's some suggestion it was like a womb. I thought it was, you know, potentially more like the colon that they were going through there.
Well, it's the same geography, so...
Yeah, well, you know.
Same spot.
I mean, especially when you get dumped out in Jersey.
Well, that's definitely not the womb.
I'm pretty sure that wasn't a womb where you ended up.
I think the funny part was when John Cusack goes through the first time, he has, like, a stick, and then he's like, where'd the stick go? And he has all these metaphysical questions, morality questions, and then the girl that he has a crush on says... we could make money. He goes, oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
All his questions just disappeared because the girl that he's interested in said, we can make money. And he said,
who rebuffs him? That's Keener, right?
That was, Keener.
What's her name? Maxine?
Maxine.
Maxine in the movie. Yeah. And, you know, so you got her, and you all of a sudden now, he's been rebuffed by her. And his wife.
She's interested because he found the portal and we can make money.
Yeah, yeah. But then they're sitting there together. And almost in the same instance, he's sitting there with Maxine and sitting there with his wife Lottie.
Right.
And they're sitting, and they both attack Maxine at the same moment.
Right.
And she basically says there's no way she'd have anything to do with Craig Schwartz, right. but she would in. I don't know if that's at that moment that she says she would in his body or something. I think
she snuck into the body first.
Yeah.
And then afterwards they realized what happened. She said she saw Lottie's eyes through Malcolm.
Yeah, that's
eyes.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
So obviously she's never heard of a three-way, right?
That's apparently not. I mean, bad for Craig.
Is it a three-way with Malkovich?
I think that's the kind of weird, perverted, you know, metaphysical questions you got to ask yourself. Did they have a three-way in this?
So... even though John Cusack wanted to cheat and locked his wife into
that was one of the best scenes in the movie. He locks his wife in.
So he can run to Malkovich and have sex with Maxine.
Who thinks it's Lottie at that
it's
moment.
Lottie, but Lottie's the one who actually cheats first.
Technically
speaking.
I don't know, but you know, in the eyes of God, if you've done it in your mind, you've done it for real. So therefore, I don't know. That's another metaphysical question for you.
Okay. but you know, she's locked in a cage with a chimp. The chimp who's been having depression issues, childhood issues. They're getting the chimp some sort of therapy.
Yeah, and they also had one of the first times I think we've ever seen a chimp flashback.
A chimp flashback, yeah. That's what this movie's about.
I mean,
the backstory is that the chimp's depressed because he couldn't save his parents when they were tied up by the the poachers.
Right. And they actually did chimp voices, too. They're like, untie it! Chimpy, or whatever his name was. I don't know what his name was. I don't know. I think he's uncredited. I think that's a sad...
Well, I have to say that the chimp was miscast. We should have had...
who? Tom Cruise?
We should have had Tom Cruise. We should have somebody from the Planet of the Apes, at least. Maybe Cornelius or an orangutan.
Well, I think one of the things is the choice of John Malkovich. I think that's kind of an interesting
Well, he's sort of a...
He's sort of an unknown to some extent.
Well,
I mean,
he's not unknown. He's more of a... He's more of a guy who does odd movies, if you will, or artsy movies, right? And and for the most part, he is rather private. He's not one of these guys who makes the tabloids. I thought he was great in this movie.
Now, he backed this movie, too, right? He put money
on it. They came up to him and they asked him to be in it, and he said, I love the script, and I'll do everything I can. I'll produce it for you. I'll get you money, but I don't want to be the...
He doesn't want to be.
He didn't want to be.
And I guess in the end, he gave in.
He gave in. It took a couple of years, apparently. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't something that happened overnight. And actually, one of the rumors was someone said it should be called Being Tom Cruise.
Then there had been a lot of closet shots.
darkness.
A lot of looking out of a slat in a closet.
That opera, what's her name? What's his name? Who sings In the Closet Part 19?
I don't know that one. Look that one up.
No, actually, I'm obviously glad he did it. I mean, one of the most amazing scenes is when he goes into his own head by going through the portal, and everybody in the restaurant has a John Malkovich head.
Yes.
But they all have different bodies. And
right.
What really freaked me out was the one with the young lady, I'm assuming, had a rack and a half.
Right.
With his face.
What,
on
she was
it.
Eating? She was eating spare ribs or something.
No, she. Yeah.
She had a rack and a half, or
so she's in a low cut dress, and you're like, yeah, oh no, it's Malkovich's face.
Yeah. You're very conflicted there, right?
And then everybody's like, Malkovich, Malkovich, yeah. Malkovich, Malkovich, and you're just like, yeah, this has happened to me.
And it got a little strange because the second half of the movie turned into, well, for one thing, Malkovich learned how to, you know, it was kind of ironically fitting, obviously it was scripted that way, that the puppeteer learned how to start controlling Malkovich.
Right, so he basically controlled his life.
Yeah, so he, but then what you come to find out, he's not the first one to be able to do that, because the old guy that owned this place was they were just waiting for the perfect moment to kind of go in and take
over. For
whatever
reason, 44 years was the optimal
time. The optimal time, yeah.
And Cusack jumped the line.
Right.
Because the old guy actually wanted to bring a whole bunch of his old friends with him.
Yeah, I didn't understand that. I mean, why was he bringing all his friends? I mean, was he the only vessel?
They're all going to be in the same vessel.
I guess. That seemed kind of odd. But Schwartz there takes over John Malkovich, and when Maxine learns that he can do that,
right,
she's interested in him.
Yeah.
And so at that point, they become like husband and wife. John Malkovich. Then he uses John Malkovich's fame to become an amazing puppeteer,
yeah,
which, you know, now a couple of the cameos with Sean Penn and what's his name, Brad Pitt, were standing there talking about going into puppeteering, I think, at that point, right?
Right.
On some runway. But
yeah, I think she was also his manager, so I think she was consistent where she just wanted to make money.
Right. Somehow. But she still was pining for Lottie. Apparently.
Yeah, I think it was established that the two of them were either in love or soulmates, or
which raises all kinds of interesting questions there about what that means, you know, about the assumption of, you know, being a woman in a man's body or a man in a woman's body, and she felt like she was right when she was in Malkovich, and I just thought it was interesting. I mean, do you agree with the premise that?
Or is there something you want to tell us? Is that what you want?
No, do you agree with the premise that you want to go and sit in somebody else's body in that way? I mean,
well, somebody famous in this case would be fun.
Yeah.
Are you just
would
saying,
you pay $200 a pop to go do it for 15
minutes?
I
would pay $200 and then take over the body. Cause
well,
I too am an amateur puppeteer. but it is a fantasy everybody has. They wish they had a different life.
Yeah. But if you couldn't control it, it wouldn't be, I don't know how, you know. The premise was you weren't controlling it. You were just sitting there being John Malkovich for a few minutes.
So you can argue that's what you were doing when you were watching the movie.
Well, that's a good point. Yeah, so, yeah, there's that element of it.
We all like to go roller coaster riding. And
yeah.
You know, the only problem is you hope it's somebody famous and somebody who will have a good time, like being Lindsay Lohan. You know, from the hours of 1 a.m. to 4 a.m. or something.
Yeah, it's drafty during those periods.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then, you know, so in the end, he kind of gets, there's like the big scene where, who is it? Lottie is chasing Maxine.
Through Malkovich's memory.
With a gun.
Subconscious.
Subconscious.
You see all these horrible scenes of Malkovich's youth.
Yeah. Where he's getting which was funny because it was sort of tongue-in-cheek. He was taking a shot at himself.
Yeah. I mean, it's almost like, this is why he's so odd, because he was picked on as a kid.
Yeah.
Which brings us to our no bullying PSA.
Exactly. That's what we're leading up to here, a no bullying PSA.
But ultimately, I guess, Cusack reluctantly releases control because he thinks the old guy has Maxine and they're going to kill
right.
Maxine. So he obviously gives up control of Malkovich. Mm-hmm. And then everybody
piles in.
The whole senior tour jumps into the bus.
Yeah. And
Lottie misses the opportunity because the old guy tries to wait for her, but then he just goes
right. Right. So then they end up, Lottie and Maxine become lesbian lovers.
Right.
And somehow.
Well, she was.
Somehow Schwartz ends up in the baby.
Yeah, because he was trying to get into Malkovich again. But he missed the window, because I guess there is a finite window.
So then you go into the next one.
The next vessel, who is the baby, who are now she's like a six-year-old.
Right.
So it is odd that they chose Maxine's kid.
Well, maybe it's passed on, because it would have been Malkovich's kid, too.
Exactly. Right.
So maybe that's how it works.
At the end of the movie, he's there pining
for his
Maxine, but he can't control the young girl like he did with...
I wonder why.
He lost all his powers.
I don't know. They never really said that, though. That was kind of interesting.
I guess it's poetic justice.
Yeah.
If you will. It still seems a little creepy, if you ask me.
The whole thing is really creepy. I mean, you know, he had one moment where he said, why am I locking my wife in the cage with the chimp?
And he does it anyway.
He did it again. Yeah, he did it again. He tricked her again. He had her call Maxine... to go
meet
Malkovich again,
right.
and then he taped her back up.
Is it bad to lock your wife in a cage with the chimp? Is that? I just want to make sure we understand the rules here.
I think that's a horrible thing, personally. Okay. You know,
at least once. If you're gonna do it twice, you know. It's...
So the director here, Spike Jonze, we were kind of looking at his cred here, right? He seems to have done relatively few films, even to now. He had Adaptation, right? And
he's mostly a music video guy.
Right.
We were going through his music video resume. But here's I guess, the story was that Charlie Kaufman, who wrote the screenplay, showed it to Francis Ford Coppola, and then he gave it to... Spike Jonze, who was married to his daughter, Sophia Coppola.
Oh, okay.
They were married at the time, and Spike Jonze loved the script and said he wanted to direct it.
He'd never direct a film before, either.
Right. But there is crossover between music video and movies. Not a huge amount.
I mean, it's like a long form, obviously. But
right. But I thought it was pretty cool that the three of them, right, Sophia Coppola, Francis Ford Coppola, it's just like, yeah, you don't have to know anybody in Hollywood.
Yeah, right, to get ahead.
Yeah, you know, there's no nepotism at all.
Right, well, you know, we know better than that. But
it is a pretty cool link.
It is an excellent link. I thought one of the most interesting items that he did was he did Cannonball by the Breeders.
Yeah.
I didn't realize
anthem.
That.
Ow.
Yeah, that's right. And I love the way they had that little cannonball rolling down the stairs and stuff. That was cool.
I don't know what happened to the Breeders. I think they all went into Malkovich's head, too.
I know, they disappeared. I know.
I guess I'd talk about Charlie Kaufman. This was the first time where I thought a writer sort of blew up. If you think about movies, you think about directors and actors, but you don't really necessarily think about writers, per se. They don't get the credits. They don't get the fame. But... Charlie Kaufman, I remember at the time, sort of blew up, you know, just going through his resume real quick. He did, after this, he did Adaptation, Confessions of a Dangerous Mind.
Adaptation, Jonze actually directed, too.
Yeah. Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, which is one of my all-time favorites.
Yeah, I had not seen that one.
It's connected in New York, which which actually made me a little angry when I saw it.
Yeah, that was in 2008. The next thing he's got coming out in 2013 is Animalisa, and it's in pre-production.
Okay.
And he's also gotten something coming out. It's a screenplay, Franker Francis, and that doesn't have a date yet of when it's coming out. So I guess the good news is if you liked the stuff that he did, he's got some more coming.
Right.
So,
so obviously he's not a straightforward mainstream kind of guy.
No, you can barely see him. He's only 5'4".
Being Tom Cruise.
So.
Yeah, I thought he was a breath of fresh air. I hope he. I don't know why he slowed down. Maybe it's just Hollywood as an industry. But you know, maybe he didn't have the box office successes with those movies. But I'm glad. Hopefully, he'll have some more stuff coming out. But again, for a short period of time there, he was the rock star, if you will. Of the writer's world, and I'm sure there's a lot of other writers who are pissed off about it.
one of his personal quotes is, I don't know what the hell a third act is. I don't know exactly.
So basically he's got ADHD.
Apparently. He only does two acts, I guess that's what that means. So, pretty interesting.
What about the Charlie Sheen cameos?
That was kind of interesting, too, because you saw Charlie Sheen in there, and he was like a...
party animal.
Well, it was a little look at what he was going to become in a few years, right?
A warlock.
Well, he had a couple lines like, maybe it's her lesbian lover that's trying to come back, and he was like, you should keep this one, you know. So because he was giving Malkovich, some advice, because apparently he's supposed to be friends with Charlie Sheen.
You're sort of getting the theme that Charlie Sheen's not really acting in anything he does.
Well, you know, maybe not. But it was funny how they showed him later when they had Charlie Sheen,
older,
when he was older and he had lost all his hair and stuff like that. I thought that was kind of funny. So, yeah, it was a good. You know, so at the end of the day, so my take on it was I enjoyed that movie because I, it was a fun sort of. You wanted to see where it was going next, and you didn't know what was going to happen. And I kind of appreciate that in a movie. Personally.
Yeah, I definitely enjoyed the movie when it came out. I think Eternal Sunshine is probably my favorite of all Charlie Kaufman's.
Okay.
Work.
Hmm.
So
I'll have to watch that one then, because if this is any indication of how that kind of came together, then I think I tend to agree with you.
Right.
So all right. Anything else you want to say about this one before we?
No, I think we're good.
Yeah. So let's take a short break, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about Mulholland Drive.
Yep.
And we're back. That was a little Scott McCampbell playing again. He's still helping us out with the music selections. So now we're going to go into Mulholland Drive. This was a very interesting movie.
It was a straightforward movie. Really not much there. Pretty obvious what happened.
It was one you had to pay attention to quite a bit. I actually had to watch it over two sittings. I couldn't watch it all the way through the first time. Because I was busy with some stuff, but it was interesting that I got sort of halfway, and then the whole movie changes by the middle. So it was like two different movies to me. Plus, it was pretty long. It was a couple hours. It was over a couple hours.
2.5 hours.
Yeah, it was a long movie. This movie's got Naomi Watts in it, right?
Yep.
And she plays what turns out to be two parts in the movie.
Betty and Diane.
Yeah. And Laura Herring, who...
plays Rita.
Yeah, she plays Rita. I don't know... I don't know much about her, but she was definitely... These two women, at least from the start of the movie, have two very different types of personalities, right? You know, one's very voluptuous, and the other one's off the boat from Ontario, or wherever she was from, right?
Right.
But I guess the movie opens up with a car crash and, right. and a death. almost death.
Almost death. So Rita is in the back of a limo. She's driving up Mulholland Drive. The driver stops, points a gun at her, tells her to get out. And so it's implied that she was going to get killed. And then I guess drag racers come down the road and they crash into the limo. She, I think, is the only survivor in the limo. And she's got amnesia. She walks down to Naomi Watts' aunt's house.
Right.
And sneaks in to fall asleep. And
yeah, take a shower and
so,
stuff.
So Betty is in from Ontario after winning a some sort of dancing contest.
Right.
And her aunt is out of town conveniently making a movie.
Right.
And Betty's here in Los Angeles to start her movie career as an actress.
Yeah. Now, they didn't really say at that point that she was there from a dancing contest, though.
Well, the opening credits show you...
yeah, but it was you didn't connect that until much later in the movie. I know I didn't.
Okay.
I'm just saying, I remember that, because I was like, why are they showing this dancing contest? What is this about? And it was so disconnected, the way that they opened up the movie after, you know, before the big scene with the gun... and you know the near death and car explosion and amnesia,
right.
So it was all kind of disjointed right from the beginning. But what seemed odd to me was the fact that Naomi Watts seemed, that character seemed not real. You know what I mean? Like the character she was playing, like off the boat, really nice, really, you know, super sweet and yet and extremely naive. I mean, did you get that sense from her character in the first half of the movie?
I think, yeah, you know, she obviously was like you said, super sweet. She was trying to help Rita figure out who she was, and she was going on auditions at the same time. But I think there's two basic messages to this movie. Right? The second message is everybody comes to Hollywood expecting fame, fortune, and success.
Right.
And whatever percentage that actually achieves that, the other 99% sort of have varying levels of horrible things happen to them.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's Hollywood's a machine that spits out the youth of the beautiful and the young of our world, and we don't really know what happens to the ones that don't make it.
Well, we got an idea what happens to them in this one.
I think that was Lynch's way of saying, they all show up sort of shiny, like a shiny penny, and they're all mm-hmm. sweet, and they're all, let them hang around for a little bit and see what happens.
Right. Yeah, so, you know, I think the first thing is like, I'd never seen this before, and I watched it cold. One thing, I mean, what I really, I think I've said this to you already, I thought she basically was like schizophrenic or whatever. And she ends up killing herself over this. And she had an obsession with this woman. And all of the things kind of like tied into this obsession where she was going crazy.
Yeah.
So I kind of believed it to be mostly fake, mostly imagined by this woman who was in a schizophrenic state. Now, I don't know. You know, there's probably a lot of different theories.
Yeah, I mean, that's the beauty of this movie is that there's so many different theories. There's one common or accepted theory is that the first half is a dream.
Yeah.
Or fantasy by Betty, and even her name is Betty, which is not the real name.
Right.
And then you have the middle, which is the Club Silencio in the blue box.
Right.
And then the second half is the reality. Betty's Diane, who's uh-huh. A non-successful actress. It's implied that she's also maybe a prostitute because the hitman's also a pimp.
Right.
That she hires to kill Rita, and I guess her guilt is so overwhelming. At the end, that she commits suicide in the bed. So the two things that are going on is besides the plot line, it's non-linear. So they show you know, the fantasy first, and then the reality second. So it sort of throws everybody off when they see it the first time, which I thought was part of the genius. Because then you can also have a little bit of a blowback that you paid attention the first half, and all that was, you know, a red herring. Right? The hitman, the cowboy, the mafia trying mm-hmm. to get the other person.
Billy Ray Cyrus was completely
You know, I kind of wish Billy Ray Cyrus was a fantasy and he didn't exist.
Well, you don't want his daughter to be around?
No, I want his daughter to be around. I just don't want him to be around.
Okay.
So, in a way, if you could, you can argue that as a viewer, you could be upset that the first half. I thought it was just fascinating. I like the whole mafia mob thing. So the other thing is, every character in the first half is in that one dinner scene in the second half, where Diane's having dinner with Rita and the director, right? The director in the first half is portrayed as somebody down on his luck, not doing very well, almost you can make fun of him.
Mm-hmm.
The second half, he's a very confident, successful director.
Right.
Right.
But I didn't believe that was real, though. I didn't believe that she actually went to that dinner.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you have a different interpretation, that's fine. But
no, I'm just saying, like,
sit there and watch that scene, every character in the first half is in that one scene with the dinner.
Right.
The cowboy just happens to walk through the background, the mafia guy sitting in the back eating. They do flash to each person.
Yeah, yeah, they did bring it all together in that one dinner, but I didn't really...
The landlord's the mother of the director.
But that would insinuate that there was some actual relationship between those two. I imagined it was all... I thought it was all imagined.
Yeah, well, if it was imagined, then why would she put a hit on somebody?
Because she was crazy. No, I mean, that was my thing, because she was crazy.
I think they actually had a relationship.
Hmm.
I think something must have happened, but it didn't turn out successful, because even in that dinner scene... The blonde woman comes by. Right?
So that makes no sense. That's why I think it was all imagined, because that made no sense. Why did the blonde woman, who was the one that was the girl, come up and kiss, Rita. Kiss Rita in that scene? That's what it told me, that this was just another, another part of her schizophrenia that was tying a bunch of stuff together.
Unlike Maxine, Rita knew what a three-way was, so the director was
Well, I'll tell you what. So the turning moment in this movie was the scene between Betty and Rita, where they become intimate. Let's say.
Okay.
That to me was the turning point in the movie, because up to then everything kind of was going in a direction you kind of understood, and that moment from there on out. Things got weird, and
well,
some of it was good weird.
Is that what you said?
Some of it was good weird. Other parts of it was like something's really not right here, and you could kind of see that it was unraveling. I thought what was so interesting was when Betty went to that audition and she played that part with all those people sitting there clapping. Right. She played it so well. She drew me into that scene.
You were the father's best friend.
Exactly. Yeah, I wanted to be the father's best friend. But, she was... because up to then, she seemed like a very shallow character. And I was like, wow, I wasn't quite sure if she was playing it straight and that was just how she is. Because I was like, boy, she's a terrible actor.
Well, they set you up because she's practicing lines with Rita. And she's sort of like... not serious, just giggling at the end.
Mm-hmm.
So she does like a half-assed job in the rehearsal of it.
Right.
And then the actual
Then you
scene,
get in there, and it was like, wow.
Right, she plays it more dramatic, effective, The best part is when they're all done, they're walking away, the casting agent's like, yeah, you did good, but you're never going to make that movie.
I didn't even pick up on that. Yeah, that's
so
funny.
It just makes you think like you go on a gazillion auditions.
Yeah.
And if you take the sinister part out about the casting couch,
yeah,
there's still odds against you that the movie's going
to
be made.
Ever going to get made to begin with. You're going to an audition that never actually happened.
So I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah, that was pretty good. So what else did you think was interesting?
Let me just finish out the other clues or the symbolism for the main theory. So there's like a bum/weirdo troll-looking character who pops out of the back of the diner.
Right.
And then at the end of the movie...
there was something special about that diner, too, right?
The location, I believe, was in Pulp Fiction and about 27 other movies.
I recognize that diner after we said that.
Right. But the bum represents something horrible, which is the hit on Rita. Right. The blue box represents the...
blue key?
The blue box is where Diane... repressed her memory into the fact that she killed her lover.
Okay.
So I think that's why it makes it more real, is that you would have to have some form of reality to be so upset to kill somebody. If you're just, you know, sort of wackadoodle, right? You're more of a stalker than a killer, right? You would kill the person yourself if you were a wackadoodle. But if you were a jilted lover, I could see you. There are more cases of jilted lovers hiring hitmen than crazy people hiring hitmen.
No, I get what you're saying. I still kind of think it was a...
Yeah, that's okay.
That's what's the beautiful thing. I think she was just crazy. I think she hired somebody to hit it. You know, but I could see where you could say, because usually crimes of passion are because there was an actual connection there, right?
Something real, yeah. And the reality is being taken away.
Yeah.
If there's a breakup.
Yeah.
And the keys obviously opens the conscious and all the stuff flows out. So in the beginning, the first half, Rita had the key.
Right.
But in the second half, the hitman gives the key to Naomi Watts.
Right.
And she's like, you know, where does this open? And he just starts laughing at her.
So, yeah, it was weird. Yeah.
And then the old people, for me, were... They were supposed to be at the dance competition. And they're the ones who said, you know, good luck in Hollywood. But to me, they represented Lynch's statement about how Hollywood eats their young.
Right.
They're the people who watch, just like you and I, watch all the product of Hollywood. Right, we're sort of guilty by association. Right, we love Hollywood TV, movies, and everything.
Of creating this whole scenario.
Yeah, we don't know how a sausage is made. Right, we don't want to peel back the layers and say how many failed actresses, how many failed people, how many horrible stories. All we want to know is the shiny parts, the good parts. Right.
Well, when you saw them for that one brief moment in that taxi cab, The old people, because right. There was just like a scene where they pop up, and I was like, "What are they doing there?" That was weird, and they reminded me of that Soundgarden video, Black Hole Sun, yeah. When they get that real creepy looking face. I kept waiting because they had that grin, yeah. But it didn't turn into that. You know how the smile kind of goes up at the end and becomes, you know, that would have been I guess over the top, but. This was post that video, because that got used a lot in a lot of places after that. But
And the old couple, if you take it literally, they're the ones who drive her to actually shoot herself in the head. Right? They come out of they crawl out underneath the door, and then they get bigger and they chase her into the bedroom.
Yes, that's
and
right.
And she pulls the gun out and
exactly.
Shoots herself in the head.
Yeah, yeah. So, all those failed dreams and all that stuff that she wanted to be, she wasn't anymore.
So the great news, there's a website. I think it's called Mulholland-DR for drive, .net, and it's got about 20 theories. The whole thing was a dream. The whole thing was real. I mean, you know, it's people posting.
I told you, I think saying the whole thing was a dream was a cop-out.
Yeah,
I mean, you could say that about any movie. Oh, it's all a dream. Yeah, it was, because he wrote it. It was all dreamed up.
I'm just saying that there's a lot of thought behind this. There's a lot of people... Mm-hmm. You know, it's not just saying, hey, I think it's this. They got to tie it back to what they actually saw. Like, one of the clues was the red lamp next to the bed, and I think it was like, who actually owns the red lamp? Because in the first half, the hitman, I think, is calling a phone number. There's like a sequence of phone calls, and it's implied that the hitman's calling whoever, you know, initiated the hit. And in the second half, you find out the same lamp and phone is Diane's. Right, so it sort of sets that up too, but that was a cool thing. Like I was a big fan of the TV show Lost, and I felt like this is the only TV show where you get homework. You watch an episode, you see certain things or names or clues, and then you got to go look it up on the internet and see how that, yeah, and that helps you predict what's going to happen.
Yeah, most people don't want to do that kind of work though.
I think that's what this movie does. Is that
yeah, it's a thought provoking movie.
It stays with you, so you kind of like, well, you know, what's my theory?
Yeah,
how do I back it up?
Yeah, and I guess I boiled it down to my own rationalization. I just thought she was crazy, and these were all her delusions that kind of led up to her killing herself. And maybe she did actually put a hit out. Maybe right. She didn't. You know, maybe it was all in her mind.
Yeah.
You know, she clearly was whacked out. And I thought it was so interesting to see how she played as an actress for Naomi Watts to kind of take that role on. That was a pretty challenging role, I think. I mean,
well, the contrast was so vast that you know.
It'd be easy to fail at it or not pull it off. I mean, I think she was very good at being Betty and then being, well, being a lesbian at one point and then also being...
Well, I don't think she was acting.
I don't know. But And then being, you know, Diane, and sort of she just looks different. Skanky. Yeah, desperate, skanky looking, and
the it's power very of believable. Makeup and wardrobe.
You know, put a little black eye makeup on, and you know, and a
don't
tank
wash
top
your hair for a couple of days.
Have your hair kind of all frizzy or whatever, and yeah, it was because that was the other way she dressed in the beginning. She was like, you know,
proper.
Yeah, you know. It was a good movie though. It was thought provoking. It's the same thing I said about being John Malkovich. It was a movie that you didn't know where it was going to go.
Right.
You know, it was great.
And it had the lesbian sex scene.
Well, yeah, there was that.
So, you know, that's not.
That's and even some disturbing auto variety.
Solo. That was abusive.
Okay. Yeah. That was... oof. Yeah. I'm sure wondering why PETA wasn't out there.
Yeah. Animal. Well, I was getting abused.
Yeah. So
obviously David Lynch is a huge resume. He did Eraserhead, which I didn't personally see. I can't get myself to see that one because I know it's actually disturbing.
Really?
Blue Velvet was probably his big breakthrough.
Okay.
Which also was disturbing, but it was really good. Wild at Heart, Nick Cage, Laura Dern, good movie. Twin Peaks was his TV fame, you know. So I was expecting a dancing midget at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Lost Highway, Inland Empire.
He had something to do with the Elephant Man too, right?
1980. Yeah.
He.
I was going by the hits though. Not.
No, I mean, that was kind of a hit to some people.
I would suggest watching Inland Empire because I think it's a little more disjointed than this one and a little more freakier than this one.
Really? And that was out in 2006. I never saw that.
It might also be a little longer than this one if that's even possible.
Is that really true?
So.
Yeah, I don't really see anything he's working on right now.
So the last thing is, like, if you read the credits... And this sort of supports his, you know, Hollywood morality thing about eating their young. Just before the credits roll, it's dedicated to somebody named Jennifer Syme. It says 1972 to 2001. Jennifer Syme was David Lynch's assistant during this movie. And I think she became a record executive later on. She was dating Keanu Reeves, and they were going to have a baby together. Unfortunately, the baby was stillborn.
Okay.
And then subsequently, the two of them split up. They were supposedly friends. But the young lady died mysteriously when she drove her Jeep into a row of parked cars, and she died.
Oh, wow.
So there's some of the people are speculating that this is the cautionary tale of all the people who send their young ladies and men to Hollywood that you know, bad things happen.
Yeah.
So that's one of the theories of.
Yeah, when you have that kind of issue in your life and probably scars you in some ways that you bring it out there. One other thing he did, which I kind of liked a lot, although it, I don't know, I liked the book Dune. He did Dune, the 1984 Dune, the one that's got Sting in it.
Yeah, I thought it was universally panned.
Well, it was for the most part, but that was a great story. There's a lot of geeks out there that definitely like Dune. The book. You know,
yeah.
that movie was a little harsh, but it was 1984. What are you going to do in 84? Such a cool story, and it didn't really get its due back then.
Right. Maybe they'll do a reboot.
They did already. They did some. Yeah. They did some additional Dunes already. There's been I think there's been miniseries and stuff done on it. Yeah. But Frank Herbert's already passed. His kids kind of picked up the mantle. So that's a pretty interesting movie. I definitely am glad I watched it. The question is, this type of movie, you know, when you go to see the movies, would you want to go see a movie like this in 3D? I mean, in the day and age that we are now with IMAX and 3D, is this a movie that you'd go see? They didn't make a tremendous amount of money, either one of them, I don't think, right?
Well, I think times have changed. I think we all have some sort of home theater.
Yeah.
Right. We all invested a certain amount of money, and it's convenient.
Mm-hmm.
At home. I know I have a 110-inch projection screen.
Right.
I'm not going to even mention what happened in Denver. All right, with the movie.
You just
shooting.
Did by mentioning it.
No, but I'm just saying, most of us have a reason to stay home and watch a movie. You can also say it's a technological thing.
Right.
Right. When I was a kid, the best thing we had was like VHS.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was younger, when I was a kid, all I knew was going to see a movie at a movie theater.
Yeah. Everybody wants to see movies.
Right. You got Netflix. You got DVDs. Hulu. There's so many more options. You got Redbox.
Redbox is fantastic.
So I think there's so many more options for you not to go to a theater. I know they're toying around with an idea like maybe you can watch on demand a movie in a theater now and you pay $40 so you get like a couple of people. It'll be cost effective.
Yeah, I think with the way we have these theaters, we have our houses set up now. That would kill them. The theaters.
Yeah, well, that setup would kill the theaters because they're not getting any money either.
Yeah. So
I think it's inevitable that's a decline. I did read an article where he said movie studios are doing everything in 3D, even if it doesn't warrant it, like a romantic comedy in 3D, because it's sort of built-in copyright protection.
Yeah.
For overseas markets, we haven't figured out a way to hack.
Oh, well, you're talking about...
The projection 3D, not the DVD 3D.
Right. You're talking about so somebody can't go in and with the video camera and videotape it yet on their little box.
Or even
and
take
sell
the
it.
Original 3D, projection,
right.
Digital copy and make that into a.
Yeah, that's only a matter of time. They'll figure out how to backward. I mean, like if, when you get eventually, they already do it for HD. You can down convert it into VHS.
Yeah. But there's something still there technologically DVD. With it. They haven't figured it out yet.
Yeah, I know that I'm fully confident they'll hack that.
The 4K cameras are using now.
Yeah.
So, but for whatever reason, that's why because I'm sure we all said, why did they make that romantic comedy in 3D?
Yeah, I think I was getting more at would this be something you'd want to go see in the theater? Especially in this day and age with how much it costs to go in, or is this something that is just here at the end of the day. I keep saying I want more movies like this. Not that I want them all to just be, I get tired of formulaic stuff. You see the story, you know where it's going to end. You got a three-act play. You got here's the beginning, here's the piece where there's a little bit of an issue, and here's resolution.
Right.
And usually resolution, redemption, and happily ever after. That's almost 95% of our movies is. He turns out a little bad. He's a little, he's not quite right. But then he has a eureka, and he makes things right at the end. And it's, cut, here we go. They're going to go to their wedding at the end of the movie. Roll credits. That's 95% of the movies are like that at this point. But at the same time, we don't support movies like this.
Like,
even me.
A good message, because if those are the ones that are successful, they do those screenings before they release movies and they get feedback.
Yeah.
So you could argue that maybe American or human conditions that we're all optimistic and we want a happy ending.
Yep.
I personally want to be entertained. I don't necessarily need...
I prefer trilogies that do that, because then what
do you
do?
Like drawn out.
Well, no, but then you get an Empire Strikes Back, which is, like a great movie. It's a great dark movie that doesn't have a happy resolution at the end of it.
Yeah, but think about every sequel out there. The majority of them fail compared to the original. Empire's the only one that actually...
I wouldn't say only one. I'd say Terminator 2 would fit into that category, clearly. It was better than the first.
I'm not going to agree with that one.
Really? I thought it was better than the first.
I thought it was more interesting.
Spider-Man 2 was better than the original. It was probably the best in the series. They can still consider it the best.
Either way, it's still a smaller number than...
No, I agree. I agree with you, but what I'm
Jaws
saying...
Jaws 2 was clearly better than Jaws 1.
I was sort of into Jaws 8, I don't know. I'm just saying, guys like me will say I like movies like this, but then I'll never support it in the theater.
I think that's also directly related to at least the American audience, where they don't want, they want to know what's going on. They don't want to be made feel stupid, Whereas I think there's a smaller percentage of people who are like, I'll just watch this and enjoy whatever you put in front of me.
Yeah.
And the more thought-provoking, the better.
They're not going to have time for that. People, right. Most people...
They're going to watch Honey Boo Boo Child.
Exactly.
Right. Now, I know I'm coming across as an elitist, but I think that is a true definition, is that if something's sort of odd or different and the majority of the people don't get it, then it can't be...
mainstream. Yeah, it's not going to... Right, I guess. Yeah, I guess that's probably...
Because there was a period where I used to go see movies before I bought my house, before I had to set up, so I fall into the suburban trap. But I would go see movies that I wanted to see, and a lot of it... You know, I hate using the word art house or independent or different,
mm-hmm.
but I would see the majority of... Right, every Tarantino movie I saw was in a theater, and early on, people didn't know who Tarantino was. Right. I must have seen Kill Bill at least 4 times in the theater.
Did you? And you enjoyed that movie?
Well, I enjoyed Kill Bill, but I think by that he was already mainstream.
He was very well established by Kill Bill. Yeah.
But there's a lot of other offbeat movies I've seen in theaters. This is back in New York, so it's a little different now that we're here in Delaware.
Yeah.
But I still try to keep up with. I haven't been very successful lately.
Of in theater stuff, you mean?
Well, a lot of it's sort of impossible unless we go into Philly now.
What do you mean?
In New York, I knew that was like even New York City, the big city that it was. Certain movies only play in 2 theaters in Manhattan.
Oh, you're talking about the limited release stuff. You're not going to get here in Wilmington. You might get in Philly.
I forgot what movie it was last year. I wanted to go see, and the closest, you know, you do that Yahoo Movies thing.
Yeah.
You say the closest theater, and it said 54th Street, Manhattan.
Wow.
So I was like, yeah, okay. Thanks.
Yeah, well,
I kind of feel
when it's got that limited distribution, it's not, you're right. We're not living.
York,
we're not in New York. You
Manhattan
know, we don't live in New York.
Geared, so. Right, it's always going to be L.A. and Manhattan, L.A.
Yeah,
and New York.
Yeah.
And there's always theaters dedicated to the arts, if you want to call
right.
it that. They're not worried about paying rent, I guess.
Right.
But I didn't realize what I had until I moved to Delaware, where you know, I wanted to go see something, and it's like it's not, you know, playing locally.
Mm-hmm.
I don't. I think I actually. I wish I remember what the movie was. I actually contemplated driving up there,
really,
and doing other things, not just seeing the movie. I would see people we know and
mm-hmm.
family and stuff. But then I just sort of called it off.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but on the flip side, again, we still have DVDs, Netflix streaming. So
I think we have a lot more options now.
Yeah. I feel bad in the sense that you want them to have box office success, but if my only motivation is for my own personal entertainment, then you can argue it's even brighter now. I know I read about half a dozen movie blogs that are geared towards, you know, more of the independent type stuff. And this one girl I feel bad for, she lives in New Zealand.
Yeah, they get stuff real late over there, because I some of the people I've made friends with on Twitter and stuff, there seems to be a lot of people in New Zealand and Australia that are really into movies, and they seem to get stuff really late over there, or not at all.
Well, to be fair, New Zealand's even worse than Australia. Like, she'll be mm-hmm. like, Australia got this. And you're like, in my mind, they're like, they're right next door.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yep. Yeah. Yeah, it's not like it's... The reality is it's probably California to New York close.
Yeah.
But, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So I know that it's harder for other people globally, if you will.
Yeah.
You know, the other thing is foreign movies. You want to throw that into the category. I remember seeing a lot of foreign movies in theaters in New York.
Right.
I don't think I've seen one foreign movie.
Probably not going to see it down here in Delaware. No. Right. Yeah, but we can get them all on...
Hopefully.
Most of them should come out on... You know, they'll end up on one of these services that we have. But, yeah, I agree. I it was more of just a question of, you know, we don't necessarily support these movies.
Yeah, but I don't think they were ever supported, so I think... Again, it seems a little unfair. We, as the consumer, have more options.
Yeah.
And hopefully these things still get made.
Right.
But they come in waves, right? Something takes off and Hollywood tries to copy it. Like, you know, they try to mainstream something.
Right.
Kind of like your craft beer people.
Yeah. No, well, that's all what it's always about at the end of the time. In terms of... I was just kind of curious. I don't recall. Did Mulholland win anything? Was it nominated for anything?
Probably not. It was probably...
Because I know. The other one was nominated first one we talked about, Being John Malkovich, the director got, there was a bunch of, it was nominated for one Oscar, here it is, I'm sorry, I do have that. It was nominated for the,
screenplay.
Let's see, what did they get nominated for? They got nominated for, they got a bunch of nominations, but just not for Oscars. There was only one Oscar nod. Golden Globes, it got, Best Director, was nominated. A lot of nominated, not a lot of ones, unfortunately, for these guys. Yeah, I mean, you know, I think that this was a, at the end of the day, it was a good film. It was one that they, I'd like to see more of it, but both of these guys, for the most part, haven't done a tremendous number of things, right? It was Best Director for David Lynch, by the way. He was nominated in 2002, so and he didn't win, obviously. Which seems such a shame, because it was definitely...
Well, you don't know what he was up against.
Yeah, I had to go back and see what it was up against in 2002.
I also feel like Lynch sort of, I don't want to say he retired or quit, but I think he stopped for a real reason.
Oh, yeah?
It just seems to be in the back of my head. I don't know.
Oh, that was the year of Beautiful Mind, so they were... And Lord of the Rings was nominated that year, but... there wasn't a lot of likelihood that they were gonna win against that crowd. Anything else you got on this? Any other notes?
That's probably pretty much it. I mean, it is. I watched this movie back to back. I think the first time I saw it, I watched it.
Well, wait a minute. Just rewinding a couple scenes in there 50 times does not qualify as rewatching it.
Oh, in that case, I retract my statement. No, I did watch it. I did watch the whole movie both times back to back. So.
I think it's worth a rewatch. I haven't rewatched it yet, but I think it'd be one. Now you could try to connect things a little bit better.
I like the first half where the hitman is trying to kill the guy on a drag racing, and he shoots the large maid through the wall, and she's like, "Something bit me." So he's got to kill her, and then the janitor walks by, so he's got to kill him. I mean, you know, it's hard out there for a hitman. Actually, that scene I just described, me and my old movie buddy were talking. We used to talk every day about movies. We used to work together. And for some reason, neither one of us could remember what movie that scene was, but we both remember the scene vividly. And we didn't know which movie that was from.
Which one is that?
The one with the hitman killing all the extra people.
Oh, yeah.
We were
sitting
there laughing, talking about it, and then we both went, wait. What movie is that from?
It was such a disconnected movie. It was hard.
He's older than I am, and I'm getting old, so we're both senile.
Yeah, that's true. That was a interesting scene in that movie where he had to. But you realize that was all fake too. I believe it was all fake in the end of the day. I don't believe he really did it.
It's hard to be a hitman now. You got CSI. You got DNA.
Yeah, I just don't think any of it really happened, but. Yeah, it was a great scene, though. It was funny. So let's do our ratings. Let's start with the movies.
I guess for Malkovich, I'll give it a 4.
Okay.
And I'll give Mulholland, I'll give it a 4.
4? Okay. All right.
Actually, 4.75.
4.75?
Yeah.
So, a jump. Yeah, 4.75. So why 4.75? That's out of 5, remember. We're doing out of 5, so... So that's lesbians. Almost, huh?
Lesbians, difficulty. it's like gymnastics or diving. You gotta add a score back. You know? Clearly, there was a red herring that we weren't watching. No, I think it was one of my favorite movies for a while. That just, like I said, if you can come up with different theories. I mean, now everything's on the internet, but I think when it first came out, you had to sort of do the heavy lifting yourself. Maybe talk to other people. Not a lot of people saw this.
No.
So for me, at least, it was like a, you know, like a fun little side project. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, after watching the lesbians again, figure out what pieces of the puzzle. Like, there's a part in the movie. This is the first time I actually paused the movie and looked something up on the internet. When Rita's cutting her hair to change her appearance, Diane or Betty takes her scissors and puts it down on a book, and they pause long enough.
Mm-hmm.
So I hit pause to look at the title of the book, and it's. Something French, something Paris, touting Paris. And if you Google it, it tells you that's an interior design famous book in Paris.
Yeah.
And I guess interior design means you change your appearance, you know.
Changing
so
your
appearance. So I wasted 5 minutes on the internet.
Oh, just with a obvious sort of outcome that means right. change appearance, right. basically.
But I Googled something.
Well, yeah, you felt like you accomplished something. Yeah. So you, well, it got you to Google something.
See, at least Lost would have had a bigger payoff than
you know.
Lost would have been like, oh, that's a scientist who thought of time travel.
Yeah. Well, so the other thing, you did mention the lesbianism in there, but it wasn't thrown in as just a sort of
diversion.
Well, yeah, it wasn't just a ploy to get, you know, guys to come in and watch the movie at the end of the day.
Because that would have been more people watching.
Exactly. But the point of this was, is it was integral to what was going on in the story.
Right.
And it was, you know, obviously it was sort of warped because it was thought of from her perspective. I still question whether it ever happened, but maybe it did. But at any rate, it was key to the psychosis of Betty, Diane, whatever,
right.
of what was going on with this chick. So I liked both of these movies. I thought they were great.
You liked both lesbian movies?
They're both lesbian movies. The first one was quirky and funny, you know, tongue in cheek.
Psychotic.
Huh?
Second one was
quirky and just a warped, dark, and you know, ultimately lethal for certain people. So first movie, I'll give a 4. And I'll give 4.5 to Mulholland Drive out of 5.
Okay.
So those were two solid movies, and you know, I shouldn't have waited so long to watch them. I'm glad you picked them because I heard it, but there was nothing about Being John Malkovich that ever spoke to me that I needed to go see it.
Right.
You know, I mean, didn't know anything about it.
Yeah, I'll make sure I just keep picking lesbian movies.
Well, you know, it seems to be a successful because we gave it some high ratings.
So what do you think about the cigar?
A cigar was pretty good. I liked the flavor of it. It the draw was a little tight for me. And you know, I you know, it tasted good though. No bitter, you know, nothing that came back to me through the whole thing that was unpleasant,
right.
other than being annoyed about the tight draw, which didn't
yeah,
really.
Mine was a little tight too. It was borderline annoying.
Yeah, so I'm giving it a 3.75, mainly because of the draw, you know. But it tasted good. Yeah,
yeah,
I liked it.
I liked the way it tasted.
Yeah.
I liked the way it started off in the middle. Lots of cocoa, lots of chocolate flavors. The double Maduro is hard to keep lit.
Yep.
It gets a wonky burn.
That one means that's the problem with that for me is that I'd probably have a difficult time having this on the golf course because of that. And that's where...
Yeah, I'm not sure you would want this on a golf course.
No.
It's not huge. It's a decent size.
Yeah.
I would give it a 3.75 for, like I said, the problems with the draw.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You accept the burn because you know it's going to be a Maduro, so you might have to touch it up.
Maybe give it like a little extra for the Batman reference.
Well, you know what? Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah, I like that.
Actually, not to get weird on you, but there's a cigar out there called Murcielago or something. Yeah, Murcielago, which I believe it's Spanish for bat.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they ran into some problems when they released it with the logo. And I think
oh, really?
The Batman franchise might have said something.
So Warner Brothers came in, or DC, or whatever it was.
That seems like the urban myth or something.
Okay.
Because I know they want... They actually picked the name in Spanish to get away from any
English, but they still had a problem with the logo.
Right, because even if you call a bat Spanish, it's still a bat, right?
Does that mean you can't do anything with a bat logo on it, I guess,
well,
at this point?
The final product has a bat logo that's a lot different than Batman. Actually, I think it's more like the wings are spread and it's got like a red outline, but it doesn't look anything like the Batman logo.
Oh, okay. All right.
But, you know... Just like I said, just keep going further down this tangent, this rabbit hole. I've heard of three separate stories in the cigar world, and this is, I guess, a different world than most, say, lawsuits, cease and desist orders
mm-hmm.
that you and I have come accustomed to reading.
Yeah,
people, you know, sue you at a drop of a hat.
Right.
Right. So there's two stories I'll bring up real quick. One of the biggest cigar releases last year was called the Headley Grange, and that's something to do with a 70s rock group. I wish I remember. I wasn't a big 70s rock person. Led Zeppelin.
Okay.
Led Zeppelin's studio was called Headley Grange in the UK. The actual studio
okay.
was called the Headley Grange. So the guy who created the cigars from Four Kicks, and he loved a certain song and the drum riffs, and he said this cigar is going to be the same thing. Like, the flavors are supposed to mirror the drums somehow.
Okay.
And this thing took off last year. So it was hard to find. People loved it, the ratings. So
what's it called again?
The Headley Grange.
So were you going to find that one?
I already had one.
Oh, what'd you think of it?
I thought it was okay to pretty good, but not...
You don't like drums?
I didn't think... I didn't like drums and cigars. I didn't think it was worth the hype, but I would probably like to have another one just to make sure that I didn't get a bad sample.
Okay.
So you would think anybody who would want to sue the cigar manufacturer would be related to Led Zeppelin in some way. The studio, the band, or whatever.
I don't know who owns the rights to all this stuff anymore.
But you understand it would be something Led Zeppelin related.
Yeah.
He actually got sued by a farming council in the United States who claims that if you Google Headley Grange, it is some sort of farming.
Wow.
Right? So they're trying to settle that. So that's my first story, is that people obviously sue for the stupidest things.
Well, like, it's about trying to get some money. You know what I mean? Right.
On the flip side, within the cigar industry, I know of three separate instances where either one company would call the other company and say, I'm coming out with this cigar, here's the name of it, I want your permission to tell me it's okay. Because it's not exactly the same, but you can see the similarity between mm-hmm. the two. And in all three cases, they did it over the phone and said, yes, you can do it, or can you change it to this? And they changed it. No lawyers, no lawsuits. Like, the main principals in the cigar industry all get along.
Right.
They realize, you know, it's not like everybody smokes cigars. But it seemed like there was a real fellowship, if you will, or a brotherhood where, you know, kind of like you just talk to somebody and say, listen, I'm coming out with this. Are you okay? And if he says yes, great. If he says, well, you might want to change it.
Do you think that's true with all of the cigar makers or the crafty type?
All the non-general cigars.
Yeah, that's what it comes back to, because it comes back to usually where the lawyers are sitting there in those big companies. Right. You know, they're the ones that's going to go out and squash people.
Right. But I'm saying in our society where everybody sues everybody, it's refreshing to see that people can actually work things out over names. I know one of the most popular names is Arturo Fuente Opus X. Is one of the nicest cigars I've had, but it's one of the most expensive cigars.
Mm-hmm.
They got sued by the wine champagne people who do Opus.
Oh, really?
Right. Two different, you know.
Well, you know, when you get a trademark, they all have to defend it. You know, and that's the thing. They don't want, you know, if you build it, your name becomes
right. But one thing has nothing to do with the other. It's, you know.
No, I agree, but they don't. You can't go out and, you know, create a shoe and call it the iPhone. You know what I mean? You know what I mean?
iShoe.
Well, no, you probably can't. That's the thing. They probably went out and tried to put something behind everything with the word "i" in front of it. You know, I lighter would probably not work. You know, but no, I agree. So, all right. So, what about? So, I guess we'll talk about the beers. What did you think about the beer?
I think I'm a little confused because I'm not getting, like, you know, for some reason I think I'm remembering the chocolate stouts we had.
Right.
Or more the hoppy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is sort of like, it's dark, but it's not doing anything for me in terms of taste. It's,
right, okay.
I don't want to say it's bland. I mean, it's a beer. It's nothing extraordinary about it. And maybe it's a little misleading because of how dark it is. I thought maybe it'd be sweeter or creamier. Less or more bitter, you know, something else should have happened.
So you thought it was just sort of there,
yeah,
kind of laid out there.
Yeah, again, it's probably because we've been doing all these different beers. And,
yeah, you know, I've kept, I,
kind
this
of
is,
expectations.
Yeah, this is one I kind of went back to.
But it's not bad.
Yeah, I enjoyed this when I had it. I think I could agree with some of it. It's not. There's nothing like
in your face.
Yeah, and sometimes it's kind of nice to just have a beer that just kind of tastes good,
right.
and it's not. Not crazy, you know. I've had a couple of these. And I think they're great. I think they're good. I like this. You know, it's one I always go back to, and I look forward to.
lot of times I'll get a Saranac 6-pack with the different ones in it, and this is always one of my favorites out of it. And I think part of it might be nostalgic for me, you know, just because I remember getting it on tap in Ithaca, New York. And you know, so what are you going to give it as a rating?
I'd probably give it 3.75.
3.75, okay. This is one that I enjoy. I think, for me, it's a solid beer. I think you hit upon a couple of good things. It doesn't have any wildness and, like, you know, overpowering flavors in one direction or another. So I'm going to give it a 4. 4 is a beer that's solid. I drink again, you know, and it's good for its class. I think it's kind of unique. I know it's just a, you know, it's called a black beer. You know, it's a dark beer, but it's not like chocolate. You know, so it's not going to have those chocolatey flavors. So I'm giving it a 4. You know, so let's move on into our week ahead and week behind. What did you do this last week?
I actually watched Downton Abbey season 2 and season 3.
You did some work then, huh?
Yeah, I was sort of enthralled by the happenings of Downton Abbey.
Yeah, I kind of want to go visit that place someday. I'm sure everybody does now. I imagine there's a mob scene at that place.
Or they give tours.
You know. Maybe they do. I don't know.
This is the downstairs. This is the upstairs. Yeah,
this is where... Oh, who's the guy with the bad leg? I can't think of his name all of a sudden.
Bates.
Mr. Bates, yeah. Mr. Bates. This is where Mr. Bates fell. This is where Mrs. O'Brien, you know, tripped Mr. Bates.
I mean, I obviously know it's a soap opera, but I will say that the out is that it's costumed and they're English.
Well, yeah, I think we always give them a pass for that. Plus, it's a period piece, so it's kind of like they've got it.
But
in
it is deliciously... fun. It's just devilish.
It's well written, and you know, I said this before, and I think you've already said it. You've told me this, is that you wish they did more episodes in a season because they don't do that many. I think that's the leave them wanting more.
Well, I think there's got to be something, right? I think the American sitcoms do either 18 or 24 a season, which seems like too much. These guys do.
HBO doesn't. That's why I like Game of Thrones. You got 10.
They do more than 8. Right. These guys, I think, did 8 plus a Christmas or 7 plus a Christmas.
Yeah, I haven't seen. So to be fair, I have not watched all of season 2 yet. Right. I think I've watched the first 2 episodes. I kind of want to savor it just a wee bit.
Yeah, I don't know what that means.
I don't want to blow through it because I'll be upset when it's over.
I think we should just meet in the middle and do like 100 episodes a season or something for Downton Abbey.
It's a good. No, they'd kill it if they did that.
Well, it's going to end at some point. Just milk the hell out of it so I get more episodes myself.
No, I think they blow it when they do that.
I think it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I like it.
I like to see when they actually do stop the series. It'd be interesting. At what point of historic?
Yeah, they can't keep it on forever.
Right. They might have 2012 Downton Abbey.
Well, no, but I mean, I guess the thing is that I know that they kind of fast forwarded 2 years. I know the third season takes place after the war, right?
Yeah.
So I just know that from the
season 15 will be, like I said, 2012.
I don't know, but I mean, there's a lot. You know, you got to see the advent of the telephone and electricity, right. And they talked about the Titanic and how that set up part of what was going on in the story. So I mean, there's a lot of tie-ins I thought were great. You know, it was just I don't know. I think it's a fun.
I was hoping
fun
if they do a modern one, they could talk about, you know, the Kate Middleton portrait. How she looks old and angry.
Why don't we do a little, you know, the Diana sequence will be kind of interesting when they get
I'm
to that.
For that.
You know, the intrigue there. So that's what you did. That's what you pretty much watched this week. It had to be because you couldn't have watched much else besides that.
That's pretty much it.
Yeah, I don't remember now. So I watched. I don't know if I started it last week or not, but I started. Definitely, House of Cards. Within the past 2 weeks, Netflix released an original series, the entire season. It's available for watching on Netflix, and it's kind of Yeah, streaming. And it's got Kevin Spacey in it, and he's a congressman, I think senator from South Carolina. I don't know if it's congressman or senator, but he's in the Democratic Party, and the Democratic president just got elected, and he thought he was going to get a high place in the
cabinet,
but he doesn't, because they want him to do something. They want him to work on the inside to kind of bring forward this education bill by 100 days. It sounds riveting already, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But all the riveting aspects come in from the way it's kind of laid out, and you kind of see some of the inner workings. And I think it's going to be good. And everybody I've seen online says get to episode 5, and then you're going to see some fun stuff. That's when it gets really good. So I haven't gotten to episode 5. I'm kind of like at 2 or 3 at this point. So I'm kind of moving through that. I'm trying to push everything forward, and I want to push forward Walking Dead, too, because I think that's got a lot of heat out there, and I want to see how much of that I'd agree with, you know. And only because I think those series are going to continue on. So I like to watch series I think that are going to continue on. And I give major credit to Netflix for bringing out an original series, because that puts them into the world of HBOs, etc. They're an actual player now. They've got enough clout to do it too, and a big enough base. So
well, only if people are watching it, right?
Well, I've seen a lot of people picking it up. I've seen a lot of buzz just in the people I know that talk about this particular flick. You know that it was that they're enjoying it.
Okay.
You know, so I'd like to see them continue. I like the concept of releasing the entire season at once and let people watch it when they want, and let it be organic, the growth. You know, let your story be out there and word of mouth spread about it so that people anticipate the next one, you know, and have it available, the entire thing. Because what I personally love to do is to sit down and watch an entire season of something, don't you? I mean,
right.
You know, to go on like a little binge. I think that's kind of fun. So, the other thing I watched.
How many episodes are there?
13.
Oh, okay.
So it's not like crazy number, but it's you know, it sounds. This kind of puts it right into your wheelhouse, what you were just talking about. We don't need 20.
They're not British.
Well, I think it's pretty good though. It's my I think it's well.
I'm curious to see how they try to develop a rating, like what kind of ratings they get, because.
I think they can develop the rating because they have it directly. It's all streaming.
Yeah, right.
They know exactly.
I stop and start sometimes.
Yeah. No, they can track all that. They do that with our podcast on Stitcher. They can tell us exactly how many minutes people watch something. Not that we know who they are,
right.
But we can see, you know, this person watched for exactly 35 seconds until they, you know what I mean?
They heard lesbian.
Yeah, right. They heard the word lesbian and they're no longer in with us. The other thing I watched was Beard Wars, and I thought that's also available.
Beard Wars, the guys with the facial hair.
No. Beer.
Oh, beer.
And it was fascinating. It was all about the craft beer industry and some of the history of beer. And I recommend that for viewing as well. If you want to sort of get a sense that beer is like everything else, and there's, big corporations, Anheuser-Busch and Miller Coors control 75% of everything that's in the United States, consumed in the United States, and most of the stuff that you'll go in the average liquor or beer section of the store, all the front-facing stuff will almost all be their products.
Okay.
I think Anheuser-Busch even controls Grolsch now, which I was stunned. I didn't know that at all. And Corona, Miller and Coors have joined forces. They create their own, you know, beers that look like craft beers but aren't, and they won't put where they're actually brewed,
right,
on their labels because they want to take, because the truth is, beer consumption for the massive mass market stuff is down. The only stuff that is growing is imports and craft beers.
Okay.
Honestly, from everything I've read,
the best place to be drinking beer in the world for variety is here in the United States, because even Germany is a glut of breweries, and they're all brewing the same stuff. Right. You know, there's very little innovation, you know, so where you're getting it is from these craft breweries. And there was a lot of stuff about Dogfish Head in Milton, Delaware, and some of their trials and tribulations. So so that was another thing I watched as well this week. So anything else you did this week?
Not much. I mean, unfortunately, it's still cold out here, so I can't smoke cigars outside.
Right.
And not too proud that I'm smoking pipes inside, but,
right.
You know, a pipe in Downton Abbey seems like a
perfect setup. Yeah, I'm with you. Night. Yeah, I wonder what they smoked. All English, I'm sure.
Well, that would be a good question. Actually, I don't remember any real pipe smoking.
I haven't seen any pipe smoking in there. I've seen cigarettes,
also,
right?
And I guess from a timeline, I guess that is turn of the century, right? The first season's 18-something.
The pipes were around longer than that, right?
No, I know, but the working class probably adopted cigarettes quicker.
Yeah, this is so it started out in 1914, and the second season's like 1917. Yeah. So.
But you would think, well, I know the Lord Grantham smokes cigars after each meal.
Yeah.
The big meal, the dinner.
Yeah. So he apparently smoked it in the house.
Right. And well, he had a room.
Yeah, a room. A lot of rooms, I'm sure, for that. But what are we going to watch next week?
I don't know. What are we going to watch next
week? I think we're going to do Argo, because Argo is releasing. Okay. Releasing.
We get our hands on Argo.
Yeah, it's coming out this week.
And I'll pick two more lesbian movies for us to watch.
Yeah, you come up with those, and we'll watch those. I'm good with that. So, and hopefully I can get through some of Downton Abbey. Maybe we'll talk about season two. We'll see if I can.
You know, for the record, I didn't pick these two movies because they're lesbians in them.
Oh, no, sure, yeah. Never even entered your mind.
Never entered my mind. I forgot the love triangle and Malkovich.
Oh, because it had been a long time since you've seen it.
Because there was no nudity.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Yeah, it's been a long time since I've seen Malkovich.
You remembered nudity. You're like, oh, no, it's not there.
The chimp was nude.
The chimp. No, he wore a diaper, so he was at least, you know, decent.
Trained.
He was trained. So, yeah. So, let's do a quick shout-out to Scott McCampbell for providing us some music. And you can find him at Scott McCampbell Guitar on Facebook. You can also find us at Movie Cigars and a Brew with Keith and Andrew on Facebook. And you can subscribe to our show on either Stitcher or iTunes, Movie Cigar and a Brew with Keith and Andrew. We're on both of those sites and just about any other podcasting directory or list, you can also find us, which will direct you back to our website and our feeds. You can follow me on Twitter at Movie Cigar and Beer, Movie Cigar Beer, and it's all, none of it's plural, and I interact out there and talk about what I'm watching. I think that's it. Any other plugs?
No, that's it.
All right, so we'll talk to you again next week. Right. Take care.